Good morning, and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. I am a haphazard gardener, a routine recycler, and a budding composter. I am motivated to grow local food, keep unnecessary things out of the landfill, and recycle what I cannot use, hoping it somehow does not still end up in the landfill. I know I'm not alone. When I told friends I planned a show that would update listeners on recycling and composting in Anchorage in the Valley, questions came in. Why can't we recycle plastic number 5 in Anchorage? Why can't I put glass in my curbside recycling? Where can I recycle household and appliance batteries? Can you put meat in the compost? Why won't my compost pile heat up? Can you compost in winter? I hope you'll bring your questions to the experts we have in the studio today, and I'm going to introduce them to you right now. We have Susanna Caldwell with Solid Waste Services in the Muni, who oversees the recycling and composting programs here, and I'd like to say welcome to you, Susanna.
Thanks for having me, Kathleen.
Very happy to have you. And then we have Randy Perlman, who's with Valley Recycling, which curiously does compost plastic number 5. So we'll learn about why that is and how that is. So welcome, Randy, calling in from the Valley.
Thank you very much, Kathleen.
Happy to have you. And then because I have a dog and I have a personal passion about what to do with my dog's waste when we're out hiking and walking, and you know, I plastic bag it, but then I think it goes into the landfill. Is that a good thing? So I reached out to I took a composting class, and I learned that the rangers out at Denali National Park with their working dogs, they compost their dog poop and they use it, you know, in their gardens, in flower beds and ornamentals. And so I reached out, and Sarah Hayes is with us from, she's a ranger from Denali National Park. She's worked in the kennels and knows a lot about, you know, the process that they follow and, you know, the bumps along the way. But that's pretty interesting because if you think about how many people love dogs and how many dogs we have, it's kind of an interesting thing to think about. I'm not sure it could work in Anchorage, but I just thought, why don't we talk about it? So we've got lots of resources on Hometown, alaskapublic.org/hometown, including, you know, links to the resources here in Anchorage that Susanna oversees, links to the Valley Recycling, links to other people in Alaska who write about composting and recycling, like Marion O. and Ellen Vandevis. We've got the study that Sarah unearthed for us, a 2005 study from the USDA and I think UAF and conservation organizations about composting dog poop. They did a study on it, and that's a very readable explanation of the way you could do it. We've got a link on the site to that. So there's just a lot of information there. I also want to say to folks, you know, if people do have questions about recycling and composting, and we've got some people who can really answer those questions for you. So you can send us an email or give us a call. The number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And I'll keep the email open, and if we get questions by email, I'll bring them into the conversation. So, and I'll repeat these numbers throughout the hour. So if something, you'll get another chance to hear them. Let's get started. I basically want each of you to talk a little bit about, just a little bit of an overview of what you're seeing and doing here in Anchorage. So I'm going to go ahead and start with you, Sarah Hayes. Just tell us briefly, a little bit about, you know, how long have they been composting dog poop in Denali, and how many dogs, and is there a summer and a winter process? And then just a little bit, because we'll give you more time later in the show to talk in detail.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me. So the sled dog kennels in Denali, it's the only sled dog kennel in the National Park Service, so that always offers some challenges. But currently we have 24 dogs, 24 adult dogs, and 8 puppies. And we've been composting for a number of years. You know, we used to just do kind of what a lot of mushers do, which is just basically pile it up in a, you know, someplace out kind of in the backyard and wait for it to kind of, you know, get smaller. But we figured we could do something a little bit more active. And so we kind of have a summer and a winter process. So the summer process is like very much like a compost bin that you kind of use in your backyard, you know, piling dog poop as well as inputting a carbon source. So we use sawdust. to kind of layer it up. And then we're hot composting, so trying to get it up to 145 degrees to make sure that we're killing off parasites and stuff. And yeah, and then we can use it on, we have little flower pots in the summertime that we use it for. So
yeah,
it's a pretty cool system.
That's great. Well, we'll talk more in detail about that, but let's go to Randy Perlman. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
Now, the thing that got me about Valley Recycling, or I think it's Community for Recycling Solutions, Valley Community for Recycling Solutions, something like that.
Correct.
But you can find it at valleyrecycle.org. How old are you guys? And the thing that struck me when I learned about it is that it's like an army of volunteers, some paid employees, but a lot of volunteers making recycling happen in the Valley. Go ahead, Randy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, back in 1998, the same year, coincidentally, I happened to move to Alaska from the East Coast, and looking for the recycling center, I could not find it. But a small group of grassroots recyclers were just beginning to meet that year to discuss and then formulate a plan for recycling in the Valley, because there was none. So 22 years later, and a long road, we have now a fully functioning state-of-the-art LEED Gold building and facility that recycles many, many things, I think 12 different items. And we do, the community support is enormous. So we have over 400 volunteers who work with us, not on a daily or regular basis, all the same volunteers, but a large group of people who come in and do help us with various things that we need help with. And the community has really bought into our model and into recycling, and it's just wonderful.
That's great. You guys are in Palmer, near the landfill and near the animal shelter, right?
Correct.
So, right.
Correct.
And so you've been doing it
I bet they would be glad to hear about dog poop. Compost.
Yeah, maybe they would. we'll find out. Let's see. The thing that I noticed, I believe that your connection to the borough is that they're responsible for the building and your nonprofit is responsible for the recycling. Is that a rough, good description?
Not exactly.
Okay.
We have a 20-year management agreement with the Mat-Su Borough. They provide some annual funding in the form of a quarterly grant to help us with the facility, but we're responsible for running and maintaining the building, equipment, utilities, staffing, insurance, and et cetera, all of those things. And the VCRS was integrated into the borough's official infrastructure, so and we are conveniently located right next to the landfill and the animal control, so folks can combine recycling with a dump run and pick up, adopt a puppy and a kitten and go home happy.
And get everything done all at once. Right.
Right.
I'm going to go over to Susanna Caldwell, who's with the municipality of Anchorage. And Susanna, we basically recycle through a business. Would that be the right way to say it? West Rock is, you know, where I go to recycle my glass and my cardboard. They're hired by the municipality. How does that work?
Yeah, so they're not hired by the municipality. They're a private company that operates, within the private market space. But we work really closely with them. So pretty much, with the exception of the Mat-Su, and I'm sure Randy can speak more to this, but most of the recycling that gets collected in the rail belt system ends up going through the recycling center, where it then gets shipped down to the lower 48 for further processing and actually getting turned into recycled materials. That said, West Rock is where most of the commodities recycling is going. And so when I talk about that, I mean like cardboard and paper and aluminum and number one and number two plastic, that sort of thing. Here in the Muni, though, we're also working with other private companies to try to develop more recycling programs. So we've worked really closely with like Central Recycling Services who help process the glass and then, create the recycled glass aggregate that we're able to use in construction projects here in Anchorage. So that's something that's all happening locally. We also work with them to set up our composting programs. And so all of the materials that we're collecting through our curbside organics program and our community compost program, where we're collecting food scraps, that all goes through them. And then it ends up getting composted out in a farm in Palmer. For the most part, most of the recycling is handled through those private companies.
So is it right to assume that what the Valley produces or what Fairbanks produces also ends up running through West Rock?
I know that Fairbanks does, and the Kenai Peninsula. That all goes through the recycling center here in Anchorage, to get shipped down to the lower 48.
All right. I have questions, but we do have a call, actually an email that came in from Peter Kirchner, who says, thanks for the show. I have some copper and a couple hundred pounds of aluminum wire, both valuable metals I don't want to put into the waste stream. What options are there for sale or recycling of these items? And I'm assuming he may be in Anchorage. He didn't say, but we'll start with you, Susanna.
Yeah, so there are metals recyclers here in Anchorage that can take that material. You know, whether it's Westrock, the Anchorage Recycle Center, they take some, as well as like Alaska Scrap and Recycling. We have a whole list actually on our website. But yeah, there's definitely multiple places where you can take that material.
Right. And so I did put a link to your recycling pages, and I know that there's, if you just click around a little bit, you can come to a page where there's a list of other businesses in Anchorage, and I, you know, that, for example, bulbs and batteries, I remember I caught that because sometimes I have recycled some batteries there. So smaller businesses that are participating. So anything else from you, Randy, on that, in case he's calling from the Valley?
Yes, excuse me. Yes, we do take those types of metals at Valley Recycling, so you can bring them directly there. And we also, on our website, have a list of other businesses who take different products that we may or may not take. Our website is under construction right now. We're building a new one, so everything might not be there and visible, but you can always call and we can answer questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's good to know. There is a place for these things so they don't end up in the landfill. So if folks have just joined us, I'm just going to let you know our topic today is recycling, composting, and we're actually going to get around to talking about the pros and cons or the ways you could potentially compost dog poop and keep it out of the landfill. One of the things I wanted to say is I was looking at the Matsuburo. The reason, I mean, to me, it all evolves around keeping things out of the landfill. And I saw, Susanna, on the Anchorage website, this landfill calculator where you could, I think it said something like there's 49 years left, you know, 49 years some days, some, you know, left in the landfill lifespan. But if you do certain things, you can extend the life of the landfill. Is that actually accurate to what's going on every day?
Yeah, so we actually, that's our landfill countdown clock. We sometimes call it the doomsday clock. Just to let people know that, you know, landfills are not infinite. They only have a certain lifespan, and once they're full, we have to figure out what we're going to do with our trash here mm-hmm. in Anchorage. We don't have another landfill here. So, that clock actually uses data that we are collecting here in real time at Solid Waste Services and then calculating the life of the landfill. So it's taking into account things like our recycle rate, so how much stuff we're recycling every day. It also takes into account techniques we use at the landfill to kind of compact the trash and, you know, make sure that we're maximizing our space out there. That's an accurate counter. And one thing that's really cool about it, too, is if you go to our website, which is muni.org/SWS, you can click on, we have some little icons that show if you recycled all your cans and bottles, which is a really small percentage of the waste stream, it's less than 5% of what ends up going into the landfill. You can add, 4 years of life to the landfill if we were able to collect all of that stuff. So just kind of indicating that even these small actions can really lead up to big savings for us in the long term.
Yeah. In my reading, to reiterate what you said, we don't have space for another landfill. I mean, they talked about the amount of space you would need in this discussion, you'd need something the size of Kincaid Park. It's like, well, we don't want to give up Kincaid Park, right? So it makes you motivated to try to maintain this landfill and extend its life as long as possible. Now, I'm not saying that anyone would take Kincaid. It was just an example of how much room they would need. And here's just one little bit of information that came out of the Matsuburo. They're talking about the need to make sure things don't end up in the landfill. And this is on the borough website. One landfill cell can cost $7 million to build. That one cell costs $5 million to close, with about $6 million in operating costs during the cell's five-year life. The total cost to build and operate the cell for 5 years is about $43 million. You know, we do live in a culture where when you put it in the trash, it's out of sight, out of mind. But boy, the numbers are pretty compelling here to try to work towards these solutions. So so let me just remind our listeners, we've got Susanna Caldwell from Solid Waste Services. That's the Muni of Anchorage. We've got Randy Perlman from the Valley, Valley Recycling. And we also have Sarah Hayes on with us, who's going to talk a little bit about the possibilities of composting dog poop, so that that is not a big part of what ends up in the landfill. Let's see. So I'm going to go back to use. Let me share the numbers again one more time. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And again, email hometown@alaskapublic.org. Susanna, back to you. And actually, this is a question for Randy. We've got links on our site that have nice explainers. The Valley has a two-sided sheet that is really useful, and so does Anchorage have a website that goes through what can you put where. And here's a question I have that I think the average person might have. Anchorage is really happy to say you can compost pizza boxes. And I noticed over on the Valley Recycling that it says, you know, no greasy pizza boxes. So this is a good example because things are regional. I guess you have to know what your own recycling facility can take. So can you each of you illuminate a little bit about this for us? So Anchorage, why, you know, are you having to sort of deal with the greasy boxes separately or is it all working well? And then Randy, why do you guys have that rule out there? So let's start with Susanna.
Yeah, so in terms of the question about the greasy pizza boxes, yeah, it is working well. You know, we are in constant communication with the Anchorage Recycling Center in West Rock about what we can and can't accept. And we're always trying to find ways to accept more materials because we know that the recycling system doesn't really catch up with the manufacturing system, right? And so there's a lot of products out there that we want to recycle, but they can't get recycled for all different reasons. And you know, we worked with West Rock. They did a study looking at whether, you know, small amounts of grease and even a little bit of cheese, you know, on those pizza boxes, whether that affects the ability to recycle the cardboard into new materials, right? And they found that it's not, that it really doesn't make a huge difference in terms of the manufacturing process. So, you know, we talked to them and they said, yeah, let's start accepting them. And so we haven't had major issues with that at the recycle center.
Okay. And Randy, how about you guys? What's your thinking on pizza boxes?
Different model that we have had ever since the beginning, and that is that everything needs to be clean and sorted by material, and then each of those materials is a separate commodity, and if it's clean, it's very valuable to some end user out there. So we take everything in sorted and clean, and then the market out there knows that our material is high quality and not contaminated in any way, so we're able to get, you know, the best money for that commodity, which of course is our revenue to keep our operation going. So we do have a different model. I do also wanted to mention something else quickly about the landfill, that not only does it cost money to build and maintain and operate the cells, but then it costs money in perpetuity almost for many, many years after you close a cell to monitor it for methane and other gases and other things. And Susanna probably knows a lot more about those specifics than I do. But so there are ongoing costs even after a cell is full and closed. That make it wise to keep things out of the landfill.
All right. I've got a caller with another question. And Susanna, when we were talking before the program, you said this is something that that sometimes people hear. Rona, are you with us, Rona?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi, welcome. Go ahead and ask your question. And I'm really interested to see what both Randy and Susanna will have to say about it.
Okay, well, I really appreciate you doing this program, Kathleen. I think it's just a really important issue. And so I am a recycler. My husband and I have recycled for years, and I've heard various rumors as to where our recycling goes to, because in Anchorage, we just dump everything in except our glass. We separate that out and deliver that individually. But, you know, where does it go? Does it end up in, you know, in China, in some Chinese landfill, or is it really being used? It's like, it's kind of there's a lot of rumors and about that. And so I just wanted to hear it from the experts. I'll take a call. Thank you.
You know what? We're going to take a tiny break right now because it's time, but that'll give our guest a moment to think about this, and we'll come back and answer that question. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And today our topic is recycling, composting, and even the idea that, gosh, could you compost dog poop and would you get compost that you could use? So we've got three guests on with us, Susanna Caldwell with the Muni, Randy Perlman with Valley Recycling, and Sarah Hayes is a ranger up in Denali National Park with experience and information about their dog poop recycling, which they've been doing for almost a decade. One more time, our phone number is 550-8433. We welcome any questions about composting or recycling or your fears that as the caller came in with, where does this stuff really go? You know, does it go to China? So we're going to answer that question in just a second. And statewide, if you've got questions, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And you can send your questions to hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, let's go back to Rona's question. She's off the air listening, but she has this worry about where does the recycling go? Do we know if it really gets used or does it end up in a landfill in some other country? So let's start with you, Susanna. What do you know about that?
Yeah, this is such a great question, and it's definitely one we get a lot, and I know that there's kind of a lot of misinformation out there, but then also, it's hard to see recycling in Anchorage in terms of actually taking these products that we're putting into our recycling and seeing them turned into new products, because we don't really have any manufacturing here in Alaska, so we don't have, you know, big paper mills or, like, aluminum refineries or anything that you would see where you would actually see your cans, like, go in and be turned into new cans, right? Because the way it works is most of the recycling that we're collecting here, it ends up getting shipped to the lower 48. And I can assure you that there is a lot of time and effort and money that goes into this process in order to make that happen. Especially with the curbside recycling, you know, we're taking all of that curbside recycling, we're taking it to the Anchorage Recycling Center, and then it actually gets baled as is, and then it gets shipped down to the lower 48 where it goes to a place called a material recovery facility, which is a big sorting line, basically. And they open up the bales, and then there are people and magnets and lasers and all kinds of technology that's actually sorting out all of that material. And then once it's sorted, it ends up going to the different manufacturers where it gets turned into, you know, new cardboard boxes or your plastics are getting turned into polar fleece and that sort of thing. So it can be hard to see it. And so I can understand why people do have concerns. But it is getting recycled. You know, one thing here in Anchorage, we only accept sort of those high-value commodities. So, you know, a lot of folks wish we recycled more types of plastic and stuff like that. And one of the challenges we have there is that there aren't a lot of places that will actually accept those materials to actually recycle them. But the things that we are recycling, like the cardboard and the number one and number two plastic, there are a lot of manufacturers who want to take that and can actually turn them into new products. And so, that's why we continue to accept those. Because we don't want to ship stuff if it's not going to get recycled. We don't do that. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah.
It's a bit complicated.
Yeah, right. And let's see, Randy, any thoughts from the Valley Recycling on that? Are you following the same process that Susanna described?
No, not really. we have a different model, and as we have had since the beginning. So we don't do single stream or commingled recycling. We sort everything out in advance. That way, everything is baled as one material. And so that bale is one material, and it's all clean. That way, it can go directly to an end user who has a need for that. And our staff is constantly researching different users out there who we can ship things to, and the prices of commodities is constantly changing. So they're always monitoring that. But because it's going out baled as one material, it's a very different process. I have a little story about a company called Thermacool with their cool story. So they began producing quality building insulation from newspaper down in Anchorage, but they needed a lot of clean material. And they found that up here in the valley at VCRS. And shortly thereafter, they moved out to the valley and opened a business in Wasilla so they could have convenient access to that newspaper source that they needed. And now newspaper supplies are dwindling because less people are reading newspapers. Everything's online. So now they're purchasing much of our clean cardboard to use in their insulation. So there's, you know, one example of a local business that has benefited from having sorted clean material. Mm. Also, the cannabis industry contributes a lot of number five plastics, and they seek us out, are very supportive of our mission and events because they have a lot of number five plastic and they want to recycle it. So it's a new, exciting market.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about number five plastics because I saw the Valley does take them, but Anchorage takes one and two. And Susanna, you and I talked a little bit in advance. There's a reason for that. Help people understand why Anchorage is not taking five.
Yeah, and before you, I do want to make clear, too, that, you know, I was just, my answer previously was about the curbside recycling. We also do accept things at, like, drop-off sites, right? Like, mm-hmm. the cart, like, when you go to the recycle center and stuff, those are getting baled in the model that Randy just described, and they don't go through that sorting process. They go directly to manufacturers. So I do want to be clear about that. There are kind of, like, two different kind of models there. But in terms of the question regarding number five plastics, yeah, so here in Anchorage, we only accept number one and number two plastics, and that's because there are really limited markets for number five plastics in order to be able to recycle that. They're definitely not as robust as the number one and number two. And the thing is, here in Anchorage, you know, we at the landfill, we accept 350,000 tons of trash a day. You know, if you think about it, if you know the former BP building in downtown Anchorage, we take in enough trash every month to fill that building. We have a huge amount of waste that we're dealing with, and we end up, you know, recycling about 25,000 tons of material a year, which is a lot less compared to how much we're throwing away. But again, we're always trying to find new ways to find more stuff. And the thing is, with the limited markets for those number five plastics, and just the amount of material we would get here, you know, I mean, it would be, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of tons of material. And so, just knowing that there aren't really robust markets for that, we're not accepting it, because what would happen is, you know, kind of overwhelm the recycling system. They wouldn't accept it. It would just get thrown away. So we want to make sure that the materials that we're collecting, because there's so much of it, that they actually have, you know, good places to take it where it will actually get used and actually get recycled.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I've got a question from a listener, Jonah. And again, I'm going to go to Randy and to Susanna for this. My question is, with the plastic windows of envelopes, does that prevent them from being recycled? And another question along the same lines is, are the highly glossy mailers recyclable? I worry about ruining a batch of mixed paper recycling with contamination. So Randy, why don't you tackle that, and then we'll go to Susanna.
Yes, well, glossy paper is acceptable, and as well as the plastic in the windows on envelopes. It's just part of mixed paper, and it can go in there without a problem. And as far as the number fives go, we do have, once China stopped accepting all of those things because they didn't want the mixed trash that they were getting, we continue to collect sorted number fives. So we do recycle number ones, twos, and fives. And I guess you just need volume to ship elsewhere than China, and number fives, we have a lot of number five volume out in the valley, so we do continue to collect that.
Right, and you also have a facility where you can store things, it looks like. I've been out to the valley and seen how cars drive through, and they're in a sheltered area. So does that give you the ability maybe to stockpile some things?
It does. Good question. Yes, it allows us to store material until we have enough for a full load. 40,000 pounds. So we can store it in a dry, enclosed area until that happens, and then we ship it out.
Okay. Could we jump over to the question of, is it the same in Anchorage, Susanna, that we can take those plastic windows in envelopes, and is it also true of the glossy mixed paper?
Yeah, no, those are both acceptable in any mixed paper recycling, so that whether you're at a drop-off or if you're putting it into your curbside recycling bin. There are processes within the recycling system that are able to kind of sort that out or just kind of deal with those very small amounts of contaminants. And so it's not an issue at all. It doesn't affect the quality of the recycling.
Okay, that's good. I've got another question that I'm going to jump right into. This is a composting question, and I know, I'm not sure if the Valley is doing composting like Anchorage is doing, so it may be only a question for Susanna, but the question is, now that the compost area is closed for the season at the Anchorage Municipal Transfer Station, where could a person drop off fruit and vegetable scraps for someone to compost? Do you know if there's any other opportunity in the community for that sort of thing, Susanna?
You know, there isn't in terms of any sort of large scale. We just run our program from May through October. We've tried running it in the winter. And we found it was really low participation, and we really struggled in terms of some mechanical issues. The material was getting frozen, and it was really hard to transport it, basically, because we have these big bins that we collect them in. So for now, we're not accepting it. I encourage folks, you can freeze your material or store it, if there's a safe place that you can keep it, maybe outside in like a bucket or something that animals can't get into. You could freeze it, and then you can bring it when the season starts over. Or I would definitely encourage folks to check out composting resources, and if they have the ability to try to compost in their own backyards, if that's possible. I know that that's not for everybody, especially, I know we talked about folks with apartments and stuff like that where it's not easy. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension has some really great resources on how to compost if you're looking to do some backyard composting.
Yeah, we do have. I linked to a column by Marion Owen, How to Compost in the Winter. That's on alaskapublic.org/hometown. She talks about that. And it does seem that some people just let things freeze in a bin somewhere with maybe leaves and a layer of food waste and a layer of leaves. And then once things thaw, wet it down and turn it over. So that's, it's an interesting question. It makes me wonder whether someday we might develop a community effort to do that during the winter. But your lessons at the solid waste services are good for us to be mindful of. I've got another question. Melanie is really kind of concerned about curbside mixed recycling. Is it really getting recycled? So Susanna, this is kind of a persistent concern that people have, I guess. She says she stopped doing the service and started just going to West Rock, so she knew she was recycling things that way. And she wondered about those big recycle centers with the magnets and all of that being kind of another energy drag. I'm surprised at the persistence of the concern. She said there were even news reports about things ending up in the landfill. So any advice for Melanie?
Yeah, so, there has definitely been a really large conversation lately about curbside recycling, and specifically talking about contamination in curbside recycling. And when I talk about contamination, I mean putting anything in the bin that isn't recyclable. So, we have our list of what we can and can't accept. And if you put anything in that doesn't meet those requirements, we consider it contamination, whether that's throwing in like a yogurt cup, right, which can't be recycled, or if you're putting in something really destructive, sort of like a bottle of oil or something like that. There's kind of these different levels of contamination. So, I talked about the material recovery facility, and the role of that is to sort the recyclables into, their different categories so they can get sent to the different manufacturers. But another part of the role of those facilities is to pick out that contamination. And so that, that does take energy to do that, especially if things like plastic bags end up in your curbside recycling. There's a lot of like mechanical things where the plastic bags can get stuck, and they actually have to stop the sort line and cut them out. And it can be dangerous, and it definitely slows things down, and it costs money for the recyclers to have to deal with that when they really should just be processing that material. We've been working to try to educate folks about not putting that stuff, not putting contamination into your curbside recycling, because that's going to make the system more efficient and more sustainable in the long run. I mentioned to folks all of our curbside recycling here, it does go to the recycle center and it gets baled as is. So if there's something in there that can't be recycled, what that means is we're sending it down to the lower 48 where it's going to get picked out and it's going to get landfilled down there. And so we don't want to do that. That's not an efficient way to manage our trash here. So just making sure people understand, don't put that kind of stuff in there. And then, again, with the bottle of oil or something, I mean, there are times where we've had, and it doesn't happen too often, but where people will put something in there that kind of explodes in the truck when they put the recycling into the truck, and that can ruin a whole load of recycling. So what's happened is, everyone in that neighborhood has done a good job of sorting their material, and one person has made a mistake, and now it's ruined the whole load, and all that recycling has to get thrown away. So we don't want that to happen because, again, people are working hard to do it right, and we want to make sure that material does end up getting recycled at the end of the day.
Okay. I'm going to take another call. Let's see. Britt, you have a question about tires. Go ahead and ask our experts.
Yeah, sure. Hi, good show today. I understand one of the things about the landfill is that the two things that take up the most space are tires and carpets. And it seems to me that if we could shred those tires, that could produce a lot of different products that just could be used, like aggregate on roads, for example, or I've even seen how you can use shredded tire material to make running tracks, at track and field places at the schools.
Okay. Susanna, any chance we're going to be shredding tires anytime soon?
Yeah, great question. Britt, you are correct. Tires are a huge challenge for us at the landfill. We're always compacting down trash, right? And as you can imagine, a tire just doesn't compact down. And actually, it creates some kind of operational challenges. Tires like to actually kind of maneuver their way up to the surface of the landfill. It's really funny to see like half of a tire sticking out of the side of a landfill because there's something about the dynamics of it. That's just how it goes. So, if they're not compacting down, that's airspace that we're losing at the landfill. So, for us operationally, we are working to get a shredder to shred the tires, which at least will densify it at the landfill. And we do use those the shredded tire material for operations around the landfill. In terms of we have a whole gas collection system. We use it to kind of align those wells and things like that. So we're trying to use those in productive ways, not just throwing them into the landfill. That said, it is really challenging to recycle tires. Tires have Kevlar, and they have all kinds of like metals and things like that. So if you're going to use them in like roadways or parks or whatever, you have to have a specialized process to pull those materials out. And right now, we don't have any operation like that here. I know that there had been something like that about, I think it was 10 or 15 years ago, and they went out of business. It's hard. It's really, there's a lot of economics that go into recycling. And if things don't pencil out, it just doesn't work. So, we're always looking to try to improve things. If there are folks who are coming online who can do that sort of thing, of course, we would work with them to make sure that they had the material, had the tires and stuff like that. I do know right now, Central Recycling Services does take some tires, and they're turning them into tire barrels, which they then use for like construction projects and things like that. But tires are really challenging. Carpet's not so much of an issue for us out there, but I would say mattresses is the same sort of problem. A mattress floats to the top. You can't really densify it, or, you know, when you just bury it. So we were looking at shredding things like that too. So tires and mattresses, very tricky.
Wow. It's really interesting to hear the questions come in. We've got another one from Molly. And I Molly, I'm going to let you ask your question and then we'll take a tiny break and come back and answer it. So go ahead. What's your question?
Hi, this is Molly. I have heard that the Anchorage landfill has a methane recapture system, and I've also heard that when you waste fruits and vegetables, you know, the concern is that they're producing a lot of methane. And so I was wondering if you could, so if we're not composting in the wintertime, is that methane going to be recaptured at the Anchorage landfill? And just maybe speak a little bit to that.
Okay, we do have to take a tiny break. It's just a 30-second break, so we'll be right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I've got lots of callers and emails, so we'll get to those. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Composting and recycling are our topics today, and the possibility of composting dog poop. And I see that we've got a caller. Marion is on the line waiting to talk about compost, and we've got another email that came in. So let's finish up with what we had, and we'll get to those dog poop composting questions very soon. So again, we've got Susanna Caldwell with the Muni. We've got Randy Perlman with Valley Recycling, and Sarah Hayes is a ranger with Denali National Park with experience in the kennels. And again, 550-8433 in Anchorage, or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So again, I'm going to go to Susanna partly on the methane question. And then, Randy, I will try to check back in with you because I haven't given you enough time. So, Susanna, what about this methane recapture? I think I saw, you know, that there's even a study or the potential for a study on waste to energy, a facility that would perhaps burn, you know. So that's, I don't know where that is, but I did see it, read about it. And I guess... I also saw that study that methane is, well, it dissipates faster than CO2. It's warmer. It warms the, creates a greenhouse gas that's even warmer. So this concern that Molly has about capturing methane, could we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, Molly is correct. We do have a methane capture system at the Anchorage Regional Landfill. It's a series of wells and piping system where we're actually capturing that methane, and then we condense it. And we actually we work with Doyon Utilities. They operate a landfill gas to energy plant where all of that methane, and well, not all of it, but most, about two-thirds of it, ends up going to the landfill gas to energy plant, where it gets converted into electricity to power Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. And it's a significant portion of their electrical load. I believe it's 100% in the summer of the Fort Richardson side, and then about 50% during the winter. So it's pretty significant for them. So yeah, that's where our landfill gas is going. The rest that we collect, we do end up flaring it, which destroys the methane. You want to destroy methane. You don't want that getting into the atmosphere. That is a really potent greenhouse gas that is contributing to climate change. And so we do want to make sure that we are destroying that and not letting it go into the atmosphere. In terms of all these questions about food waste, I'm not sure I completely understand it, but you know, the thing is, when you're composting versus putting things in the landfill, there's two different decomposition processes. And so when you are composting something, it's decomposing aerobically with oxygen, and so it's just producing CO2, which is a natural decomposition process. And so that methane is not created. The difference is when you put that food waste into a landfill, it does compose anaerobically, which creates the methane, which is the potent greenhouse gas. And so it's a problem at landfills all across the world. I think, you know, food waste is like, if it was a country in terms of emission, it'd be like the third largest producer. So it is quite a challenge for folks mm-hmm. trying to deal with that. Mm-hmm.
If you you know, had a bin where you froze your compost over the winter and then started to recycle it in when it defrosted in the spring, you're not creating methane gas then, right?
No, if it's frozen, no, it's not decomposing. No. Yeah. You know, the only time it would be anaerobic is if, I know folks have their 5-gallon buckets, if they kept that tight in a garage, it might get pretty funky. It might have a little bit of anaerobic. It might start, at least.
At least get going, yeah.
Yeah, but if it's frozen, it's fine yeah. until you bring it, and then it'll decompose naturally yeah. in the composting process.
Okay. Well, I want to go back to you, Randy, quickly, just because I don't think you're doing curbside recycling in the Valley. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are correct.
Okay. And you are separate from the landfill. I imagine there's a lot of communication between you and the landfill over methane and all kinds of things. But do you have anything else to add there on the methane question?
Unfortunately, I don't. I am the interim director at the recycling center, so I have not been involved on this end of things for very long, so I don't really know the ins and outs of methane at the landfill, but that's a good question I'll be asking them, though.
Yeah, okay, well, that's great, and I do want to go to Sarah. Hello, Sarah. Are you been hanging on there from Healy to talk about recycling dog poop? Are you there?
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you. I'm sorry that you've had to wait, but I do.
No, it's been really interesting, actually.
I have a question that came in on dog poop, but I'm going to let you describe a little bit. Tell people how you're doing it, and then we do have Marion hanging on who wants to talk about composting poop during the winter as well. So first, let me give you a little bit of time, Sarah, to talk about the process up at Denali with the sled dogs.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we basically kind of follow, if you know much about composting, there are a couple different ways you can do it, but we're kind of, in the summertime, what we do is kind of the hot composting method. So we have a series of bins that we collect the dog poop in. You know, dog poop is kind of the nitrogen component of compost. So you kind of have two components. You've got the nitrogen and you've got carbon, so often called greens and browns. And so dog poop kind of falls into the green section. And that's also kind of a lot of your kitchen scraps, grass clippings, stuff like that. And then the carbon section, the browns are more of like your kind of dry stuff. So like straw, paper, sawdust, that kind of thing. So what we do is our carbon that we're adding is, you know, wood products that we have either from our carpentry shop or we've gotten kind of like the scraps from the Great Alaskan Bowl Company in Fairbanks. And that you try to keep kind of dry because that also helps with your like adjusting your moisture content. So we generally do like a 2-to-1 proportion of, you know, two parts poop to one part our carbon source. And we're kind of layering that in bins. And then what you're doing is you're, you know, kind of chopping things up small because if they're smaller, they have a higher surface, you know, like interior to surface area. So it decomposes a little bit faster. And so then, you know, we're kind of turning it over in a series of bins, looking for it to increase in temperature. So you get thermophilic bacteria that breaks down a lot of that stuff. And we're looking for, you know, 145 degrees tends to break down. It tends to be the temperature that really breaks down a lot of things that you're concerned with. You know, I think, you know, composting dog waste, you know, there are some concerns with it. And mostly, I think a good rule to think about is, like, healthy dogs make healthy compost, right? And so for our dogs here at the kennels, we're making sure that they're getting vaccinated on a regular basis. So, you know, they're all up with their rabies shots as well as their 5-ways. But we're also deworming them on a regular basis. I think that's definitely one of the biggest concerns is that, you know, like worm eggs can, you know, pass from humans or from dogs to humans. And so composting is a really important part of that, breaking that cycle to make sure that nothing gets transferred to anybody else. So that's kind of the basics of our composting system. And so, you know, once things kind of go through all the bins, you know, and we get lovely compost, then what we do is we use it on ornamentals around the kennel. So we just have some, you know, plants and flowers in the summertime that kind of brighten up the kennels area for the visitors that come to say hi to all the dogs. And it's kind of a cool, you know, cycle.
Story, yeah. Yeah. Well, that does raise questions if we were thinking about dog composting on a community level, say in Anchorage. You know, I think about all the dog parks we have and all the dog poop that's deposited at the dog parks. But it seems like it, you know, you don't know the history of all those dogs. You don't know whether they've been vaccinated. You don't know if they've got worms. So it makes it a bit more complicated process. You have control over your waste stream, basically, in a way that maybe a community might not have. So that's an interesting question. It makes me think that maybe, you know, I think of all these scoop the poop or poop scooping businesses that we have in Anchorage that will come into your yard and scoop your poop, and whether or not they could develop into something where they had an end process of composting the poop. But as a business, maybe being able to be more on top of it, or even require owners to show that their dogs have been vaccinated or dewormed, you know. So there are some issues there. Let me just say, I've got a couple questions. One came from a woman who said she gathers poop at dog parks, but puts it in the bin without a bag, and she's wondering if that's okay. I don't know, Susanna, can you speak to that? Those big bins that are at dog parks, what are they going into the landfill directly, and it wouldn't matter if there was plastic or not?
Yeah, so yeah, if you're just dropping it off in a trash can or whatever, it's already lined with like a bag or whatever, that's not a big deal. If it was liquid or what, I mean, then we'd have some issues potentially, but as long as it's just regular waste, that's not a problem at all. The plastic bags are not an issue there. Mm-hmm. I would say if you had like a dumpster or something, I would not recommend putting it into like a dumpster or into any container that did not have like a garbage bag in it, because that's just going to make that container really messy and hard to handle. And it's just it's not a good community move, right? You know, it makes it gross and it's hard for the operators who are collecting those materials and stuff. So, but if it's a lined trash can, it's fine.
Okay. I'm actually going to bring Marion on. We're going to just connect with her. Hello, Marion.
Hi, Kathleen.
I see that you've been holding, and I really appreciate it. I just wanted to see what you could contribute to this composting of poop during the winter, because we have had a lot of interest in it. What can you say?
Well, I did have a question, too.
Okay.
You mentioned using the compost on ornamental. So am I assuming that then it's not recommended that you use the dog poop compost on vegetables?
I'm going to go to you, Sarah. I think that is the safest way to go, right?
Yeah, so we recommend that, you know, you at least start off with using it on ornamentals. Honestly, personally, you know, in my own garden, in terms of like rotating, you know, dirt around, mulch around, like you could start on ornamentals and then kind of like start planting like above ground stuff and then like root vegetables and stuff like that. I think, again, it really depends on, you know, again, healthy dogs make healthy compost. So if you don't necessarily know what dogs are contributing, or if you do know what dogs are contributing and they're all healthy, like there aren't really that many concerns. It's just that, you know, stuff like worms and stuff like that can definitely live in the soil and transfer to, you know, to crops and humans, you know, if you're working with your hands and you're not washing your hands, that kind of thing. So, you know, out of an abundance of caution, you know, we are the National Park Service. We're a public-facing organization. We have visitors coming and you know, milling around. Like, you know, we're not going to be growing potatoes and handing them out to visitors. But it's just, you know, it's kind of, as I said, like if you know where things are coming from, then you can be a little bit more confident about putting them on vegetable crops or like something that you're going to eat. But if you don't necessarily know where that waste is coming from, it's the safest option is to put it on ornamentals and kind of wait for a little bit more of that kind of organic composting process to kind of like work on anything that might be in there.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, you know, in the summer, how is it 6 weeks for a bin to turn over and become compost? 6 or 8 weeks? Is it something like that in the summer?
Oh man, it really depends on the weather. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, we're right by the Alaska Range, so we're a lot cooler than Anchorage. And so it definitely takes a little bit longer. Like we can have stretches of time where it's just rainy and cold and wet. And granted, our bins are covered, you know, so we can kind of control that moisture, but If it's cooler to start off with, like, you know, if you don't have a full bin, it's not going to start getting up to temperature until you have a full bin, and it kind of gets going. So it really depends.
Okay. And I actually heard from Cherry Northen. We have an email from her. You might know the Watershed District. Sherry works on that, and one of their programs is the Scoop the Poop, which is they're trying to get that poop out of the water stream. And she notes that in Anchorage, the estimate of dogs in Anchorage, that they're producing 20 tons of pet waste on the ground daily. Wow, that's stunning. Dog poop that's not picked up will eventually find its way down to the local waterways. She does have a question, and she encounters it a lot, where people think, are they making a difference if they use compostable waste bags going into the landfill? And I guess maybe that's a question for you, Susanna, versus just a regular plastic bag.
Yeah, so, you know, a compostable plastic bag will break down faster than a regular plastic bag. So, I have a couple dogs, and I pick up their waste using compostable bags because I do think that is a better option for the material going into the landfill, because I know at least that will break down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard a complaint about compostable bags. Like, you reach in and you're grabbing the poop and your hand goes right through the bag. So have you found a successful, it works successfully for you?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't do anything special. I think I get my compostable bags from Petco. I mean, you can kind of get them all over, right?
Yeah.
If they're designed for pet waste, they're a bit thicker. You know, sometimes with, like, food scrap collection bags and stuff, they can be a little bit thinner. And they especially struggle when there's a lot of moisture or, like, especially warm things. I know, you know, we tell folks in our composting programs, you know, to put, you know, to not put cooked food in, but sometimes people will have something warm and it goes in there and it will leak through the bag. It almost like melts right through the bag. But I found that in my own personal experience, I haven't had any issues with the poop bags. Yeah.
Okay. So if it's landing up in the landfill, but at least it's composting if you're not using a plastic bag. So that's good to know. Well, let's see. I'm just going to, we've just got a couple minutes left. I'm just going to circle back to Randy. Randy, what's something you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, that everything is a resource and nothing should be wasted. So if you're not for zero waste, how much waste are you for?
Mm-hmm.
That's a quote from Molly Boyer, a longtime executive director and founding member who started this whole organization 22 years ago. So it still makes sense. If you're not for zero waste, how much waste are you for? You know, education is key to letting the consumers understand what is recyclable, how to do it best for your facility, and let's just all do it, because together we can turn it around.
Yeah. One more email I got from Big Brothers Big Sisters, a pickup service. They just want people to know, you know, there's some other options besides throwing something away in the landfill. They welcome people donating clothing, and that they'll even try to find, if they can't use it, they'll try to find a resource that can use it. So that's just Big Brothers Big Sisters weighing in here. Let's see, Susanna, anything you've got for our listeners just to take away with?
Yeah, I mean, I would just note that we do work really hard here in the municipality of Anchorage to make sure that things do get recycled. And, you know, I know if folks do have questions about that, including more details, you know, they can certainly contact me or the Recycling Center, and we can definitely give them more information on that. Make sure you're doing it right and, you know, recycling the right things, and that small changes or small actions lead to really big changes. So, yeah.
All right. Well, you hear the music. That's the end of our program. And I would just like to thank our guests, Susanna Caldwell from the Muni, Randy Perlman from Valley Recycling, and Sarah Hayes, a ranger up at Denali National Park. Let's see. Hometown Alaska will be appearing again, or you can listen to it again on the 15th and the 29th, but we will be taking the Thanksgiving Day week off. And thank you so much to our guests and our callers. And Ammon Tobin was our audio engineer. Thanks for listening today. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.